Welcome to season 2 of Grund Podcast, a show about game development, adventures, music and everything in between. It's been 2 months since I recorded first season's last episode, and unfortunately it shows in my mumble again, sorry. But what I really wanted to say is it's so good to be reminded how great people are. The minute I kind of forget about it, there's again a chat where I hear a genuine person that has passion, care and, well, humanity. Sometimes we all are caught up in these superficial things around us, and it's so great to again come across a person who just wants to make others happy. On today's episode, our guest is Jonas Fish and Chips. Missed my jokes? Our guest is Jonas from Germany, who is at the helm of creating Prim, a huge Kickstarter success and, well, could I call it media darling? Alright, let's go! Shandy, take it away! So, I have pressed the record button. Have I? Damn. So whenever you're ready.
I'm ready if you are.
I want to welcome you because you are the opener for our podcast's first episode of the second season. I just felt it does sound really cool. So we have second season now. And And why exactly you? You are here for a couple of reasons. One of those are that I've been hunting you for since November, I think. So finally it happened. And the second one is how to say that? Majority of adventure games are made with cartoonish aesthetics, but yours does stand out with quality with a big K. So my first question would be right off the bat, was this aesthetic always been there for Prim?
First of all, thank you for introducing me so kindly, Olaus. Thank you for having me. I'm really pleased to be here. And thank you for all the nice words that you have for Prim. Let me try to answer your question.
Yeah.
The very first drawing of Prim was made by yours truly, which means myself. Mm-hmm. I'm not an artist. I'm not a particularly good artist. I do sketches for all the backgrounds and characters, but I'm not very talented. So I just had the idea of a kind of gothic looking little girl with an eyeball missing, and that spider being able to replace her eyeball. That was the first design idea that I had. And so I needed, from the beginning on, I needed people who were able to put this vision into practice in a way that looked good. And I had the feeling that I wanted to go for that Tim Burton-y, creepy but cute style that somehow is able to give you goosebumps in a creepy kind of way, but on the other hand also feels welcoming and warm and lovable.
Like a gray.
So I, yeah, right. So the first person I contacted was Oscar Alvarado, who is a Mexican comic artist that I really admire. And I asked him to create the style for the game, which he did. And basically he came up with the design for Prim and Thanatos. Was her father, and already his first sketches just blew me away and gave me exactly the vibe I was looking for. And we pretty quickly agreed on the black and white aesthetics as well, since this is not only something that Tim Burton frequently does in films like Frankenweenie or in some of his short films, it's also, as you say, that sticks out from the crowd, something that catches your eye in a different way. And I think that limitations always make you creative, and by not relying on too many colors, we had to get creative in terms of, working with contrasts and working with shadows and being inspired by German expressionism like Tim Burton, we could do this quite well, I guess. And we created a style that is clearly inspired by Tim Burton and other artists that go in similar directions, but still is some sort of unique, I think. It doesn't look like a ripoff. The inspiration is clear, but I have the feeling that we created something that is unique.
Oscar created the vision, and afterwards, is he still working on Plim?
Right now he isn't. Maybe in the future he will be. He did some character design for some of the characters, but right now he isn't part of the team. But that's since I'm mostly working with freelancers, there's sometimes a coming and a leaving. And for now, we don't work together, but maybe we will do this in the future. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he basically created the style of the two main characters, and the other characters obviously are inspired by that. But
he created the guidelines artists can... Actually, I have one question. You mentioned working with freelancers and they come and go, which probably sounds way rosy and easy as it actually is in real life. That's why my question is about your experience in working with freelancers and making the studio happen, I presume just over the internet, because from my own experience, I lost an artist who was kinda like your Oscar, but in Grund, and it was really scary stuff to actually to look for another artist who is as good. And my question was, how do you deal with those problems and any other development hurdles you experienced?
I think it's a difficult thing working remotely as an indie studio. Of course, it would, in a perfect world, we could all afford to have a fancy office and get the team together and work next door with our colleagues and giving each other feedback just by having a look at in the other room. But I mean, the modern technology is a curse and a blessing at the same time. It's really cool that you can find people to work with all around the globe, but there are, of course, advantages. Let's take the example that we both experienced, somebody leaving the team and finding somebody mm-hmm. new. I think the internet gave me the opportunity to find talented people quite quickly. Also, because Prim is precisely not my very first adventure game. I've worked on a couple of freeware titles before. So I already knew a couple of artists that I really enjoyed working with, and some of them agreed to at least replace an artist for a certain amount of time. But I also had the opportunity to get in contact with other people who are artists, and therefore I was able to replace the open positions quite quickly. But I think what you mentioned, the hard, where it really becomes hard, is the part where you have to adjust drawing styles, and where I consider myself the artistic lead. Even though I'm not an artist, I still have the vision, and I really have to be really critical sometimes when it comes to new staff members or new team members. Because, of course, they try to imitate the style, and of course, they try to come up with their own vision, which is okay. But it always has to seem like it's the same game. And this is the biggest difficulty, I guess, when you have switching team members, especially in the art department, so that it feels like a cohesive whole in the end mm-hmm. and not like jigsaw pieces coming together and they somehow don't fit.
Yep, exactly. In that, I praise Reddit. In my case, because I think I found all like people who work on Grund on Reddit, I think, except
two
of them. Yeah, I never thought that Reddit will be the place. But anywho, yes, you mentioned that you made three games already. You didn't mention the number, but I found out that.
But you know, since you are well prepared, cool.
Kind of, yeah. And all of those came to life via game jams. Am I correct there?
Yeah, absolutely.
For your first game is what was the name? Not Slayer. Come on.
Right. The shirt looks similar. It's The Diary of a Roadie.
Yeah,
that's the title.
What is there any? I always have to ask this question. Is there somewhat your music taste is involved there as well?
Yeah, of course. I've been playing in a rock band for 15 years now. A little more actually. And I'm the singer and guitar player of a band called Inhuman, whose band name sounds much more evil and metal-like than we actually are. We call our style modern rock, which is basically a mixture of alternative punk rock and a bit of pop as well. So we're not really a metal band, but we enjoy that kind of music pretty much. And I always wanted to tell a story of the people behind the scenes that none of the crowd ever witnesses, meaning the road crew. And I basically combined this desire with my even bigger desire to make a game at some point in my life. I always planned to make an adventure game, but I had no idea how to actually do that until I discovered engines that make me capable of doing so. And so The Diary of a Roadie was born in the context of this game jam.
And despite all your love that you just mentioned, you started that game with a roadie passed out in his own saliva, let's say that.
Yep.
Dude. What the
right. Heck? So actually, there's a bit of stereotyping involved, but the whole game is so tongue in cheek that I don't think that anybody is going to take that too seriously. I hope so.
Well, if they do, then let them. That's their
yeah,
problem.
Right.
I presume then that you mentioned that you waited for let's say software to allow you to do this thing you wanted. It's an adventure creator, or what?
No, the first projects I worked on, all three Game Jam games, were made using Visionaire Studio.
Uh-huh. And the Prim?
The Prim demo that is online right now has also been made with Visionaire Studio, but from summer on this year, we have switched to Unity.
Basically, you redid the demo twice, then?
Yeah, right. That was a bit of work.
Yeah, well, and why? Why did you choose? Because Unity is considered, and well, it is way more complex than adventure game specific engines. Why did you choose to go this route?
The learning curve in Unity is much steeper. You take much longer, or you need much longer to really get things working and find a workflow. But I'm really happy that I did so. We originally chose working with Unity for a couple of reasons. I would not like to elaborate on all of them. One of the main reasons was that in the future, I'm probably going to working with another programmer to divide up the workload a bit better and maybe restore my work-life balance a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And the programmer I like to work with is professional with Unity. So this was one of the main reasons. I still enjoy working with Visionaire Studio a lot, since it's very user-friendly, and for me it will always be the engine that I started game developing with. But if you think about porting games to various platforms, which we might intend doing in the future, it's a plan that we cannot say we will definitely do so, but we plan on doing so, then Unity might be... You can do this with Visionaire as well, but Unity is more, how do I say it?
Flexible.
Probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am with you exactly for the same reasons. When I chose the engine to work with, it was partly because I liked the interface more.
Yeah.
Because it's more professional, and when you, for example, are used to work with the Adobe package, then it's like, oh, I could get on board with that.
Making and Grund with Unity as well?
Yeah. Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Well, we have 3D, for God's sakes.
then it's much easier, probably.
Yeah, and you're right. The learning curve is really steep, and you have to learn a lot, but it's totally worth it. Anywho, so the first three games are off the way, and did you start playing with Prim right away? It your third game was on 2018, so mm-hmm. did you start to work on Prim right away?
Yeah, after my third Game Jam game, I decided that I wanted to create something big, something that actually deserves the name full-length game when it's done. Mm-hmm. And I was looking for, I mean, as a creative person, I had a handful of concepts up my sleeve, and I had to decide which concept was one that might intrigue me for years, because I, as a realist and then single developer, knew, okay, it will probably take me, I don't know, 5 to 10 years to get something done. So when I started in 2018, I chose Prim because it's a concept that has always been fascinating me. What if death had a daughter? What kind of story could you tell? What kind of experience could you create? And the first sketches and the first ideas were juggled with then in 2018. And this is when the first sketch of Prim by Oscar was created. And then, yeah, basically I spent the entire next year creating a concept, creating a plan. Okay, how I knew that I couldn't do the art myself, and I wanted to have real creative and talented and professional people working on it, so I needed money, and this was the plan that I made in the years to come. How do I get money? How do I do promotion? How do I create a community? How do I engage people? How do I present myself and the game online? So basically, the whole package. Do I found a company? If so, what kind of company? Yeah, and it took a lot of planning.
Correct me if I'm wrong, your demo came out before you launched your Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah, right. A couple of weeks before that, I think.
Of course.
Two weeks officially before the Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm. So everything till then, you already mentioned that you planned a lot of things and finances as well. How did you finance the demo? Because it does cost money.
Yeah, right. I basically took the money from my own savings. I'm happy to have a regular day job that pays the rent pretty well, and I'm still working in that job, so I don't really have to worry about game developing making me able to be alive. So this is the good thing. The bad thing is that I obviously sometimes don't have enough time, or don't have so much time for game dev as I would like to have. And so I took parts of my savings and I invested in my dream, which
Kudos.
Meant yeah, right.
That's a metal thing to do, man.
It is. And in the end, it turned out that it was a good decision to have a demo that is polished to the maximum, because if you present such a vertical slice, I think it has to give a realistic impression of what you're capable of doing when you get funded, for example, on Kickstarter. So every backer can see, okay, this is the quality they can deliver. And so it also took me pretty long to actually make the demo, because I did some things programming wise that I've never done before. And I tried some animation stuff that I haven't done before and how to implement them and so on. So I had to leave my comfort zone behind a bit. And I took really long to make it so good that I was really proud of releasing it when I did.
Congratulations just now, and you did wonderfully, and your Kickstarter, I think in my eyes at least, it smashed really good. Why I'm talking like, I don't know, like 20-year-old? It went really good.
Thank you.
You mentioned that you learned a lot of things new in programming wise and other stuff. Out of curiosity, where do you? Out of curiosity, which software do you use to create dialogues and logical consequences? Yada yada, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right now, I'm actually on Twine, which is a software that you can use to create text adventures, and which is a really cool and handy tool, in my opinion, to write interactive stories, because you can use variables, you can use conditions, you can really come up with a logic when it comes to constructing dialogue trees, for example. This is really cool, so you can really get a feeling for how a dialogue tree feels when you play it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this is also pretty handy because it displays all the script as some kind of flowchart, and you keep the overview. I think you can basically, at the beginning I just worked with Microsoft Word, which is a nightmare if you write interactive stories, that you have to do so many references all the time, and it's a nightmare. And I can highly recommend using something like Twine, and it's free. I know there are things like Artistry Draft out there that offer much more professional, maybe, or at least they have more options of implementing and work with Unity quite well. But I'm happy with using Twine because it's simple, it's working, and I always love that you have the entire script in one file. So you don't have to switch between 1,000 Word documents, saved in different folders. So I have everything I need in one place. I have my major script document, and I have my major puzzle dependency chart document. And these are my two design documents that are growing each day. And I love seeing them grow.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I am huge Artistry proponent, so I was wondering what that's why I was wondering what do you use, because these softwares are all good. And anywho, now let's switch to you, because I actually had to ask those questions beforehand, but I had figured out the first two sentences from one question, and so I went with that. Blah, 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 blah. You are from Germany. That's one.
Yes.
That we all know that. But that's not my question. It's not even a question. Actually, my first question about you is, what do you do? Because I have a feeling that you're a really, really busy guy. Apart from playing in a band, what do you do? What's your job? And
I have a couple of jobs, actually. The most important one, actually, being a father of a 2-year-old daughter. That's my most important job. That is most important to me.
Amen.
And so this is basically the job that I love spending my time with the most. Apart from game developing, which ranks number 2 very closely. But I also really enjoy my daytime job, which is I'm a teacher. I'm an English and philosophy and ethics teacher here in Germany at a high school. And I've been doing this for 10 years. And I really enjoy working with young people and accompanying them during some of the most important years of their lives, and sending them away to be successful after a couple of years. So this is also really enjoyable, not much so during the pandemic, to be honest, because we really had to adjust to the situations that were offered to us.
Sure.
Yeah. Basically on Friday and on Monday, we had to do something entirely different, and this was kind of weird. And now we're basically kind of back to normal with a lot of testing yet involved, but it feels like my job again, and this is what I'm happy about. And yeah, that's what I do. I'm a musician, I'm a teacher, I'm a father, and I'm a game developer.
It's a nice bundle.
Variety? Yeah, definitely.
It's a nice bundle. Somebody told me on the street that in Germany there's really, really, really strong adventure games community and fan base. Is it true?
I think it was Tim Schafer who once said, adventure games are dead except in Germany. And I think in some respect this might be true. I can't really judge, to be honest, because I don't have clear insight into the adventure game scene in other countries. I mean, I just know the wonderful international community that we have, that you are yourself part of, like on Discord, on Twitter. We have wonderful people really keeping the genre alive. When it comes to Germany, I know that there are at least some places online where adventure game fans meet and really celebrate these old-fashioned types of games. There are a couple of websites like Adventure Treff, where in the forum you meet wonderful, lovely people with the same passion as we all share. And and recently I've been lucky enough to get to know a couple of developers coming from Germany as well. So I know that there are German developers who also love the genre and keep it alive. And I'm not quite sure, I don't have the data, but I think Germany is one of the few countries where adventure games at least sell okay. Because let's be honest, they don't sell well. This is not why we're making them. We don't want to get rich by making them. But there is a community here which is actively enjoying and buying these games. And some developers do their best to give them something new frequently.
Well, first, talk about yourself. I actually want to become a millionaire. My wife laughs at me, but well...
Why not?
Yeah, but
always aim high.
In all seriousness, I still don't have a German localization, which was my actually primary goal, like a year ago. I feel that this won't come go into podcast because I am actually asking you a personal favor. Do you know any localization people?
Yeah, I do.
Would you share?
I've been working with a team called the Warlocks.
You're working with actual team for localization?
Yeah, right. I hired professional localization artists for the demo. And I will do so for the game as well.
Wow. And yeah, what's the reasoning behind that? That you choose to hire... not an individual freelancers, but a studio that is
the main. The main reason, I think, the main reason is that localization is highly underestimated sometimes, or its importance is underestimated. I think there's nothing worse than playing a game in your mother tongue and somehow having the feeling, okay, this isn't done properly. And I know that there probably are people out there doing a decent job translating and localizing game scripts and not being, in quotation, quote, professionals, unquote. So they just do it because they love doing it. And I'm sure that there are people who are capable of doing it. But on the other hand, I think there are a lot of people who claim they can do it well, but the reality is they don't. And
you can't check it.
Yeah, right. You have no opportunity except for you are lucky enough to know a person coming from their country. And then the person, if they can afford the time, checks it for you. But I think it's highly embarrassing for a game developer to release a product that is falsely or poorly localized. And I know that the guys I'm working with do a great job.
I had the opposite preference. I love to work with individuals, and still do. But I about two localizations, I actually had complaints. That was not nice.
Definitely. But I'm really happy for you that it's working with some of these people. So you're lucky enough to have a bunch of guys who can translate pretty well, and that's really a good thing.
Because they have the community of their own, of course, and I touched that community, like, of course, how much can I know, but what I do know that there's a grudge usually between individuals and studios, because studios, like they do work as a monopoly, and they want to make, they need to make their cuts, so the translators are, at the best case scenario, right, underpaid, and we are not mentioned, even that they are not mentioned in the credits of the game. That's also
right. But the team I'm working with, actually, they aren't a company. So they're basically really a team in the best sense of the word. And all the translators, the localizers themselves, are freelancers.
Oh, well, then that's the way to go then. Yeah, that's a great way to... That's a great thing you found there. Now you are in Unity for what? Year. But you are in a game industry for a lot of years now. And you've seen yourself how games are evolving and changing, and adventure games as well. What do you think? What future holds for us in this regard? This genre does have its own its own characteristics, and what do you think, will adventure games survive outside Germany?
This is a really interesting question. I'm sometimes wondering how long they are going to survive, because most adventure game players who somehow put up with the slower pace and the mouse controls are people who feel a strong nostalgia for games that came out in the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s. What happens when these people grow older and stop playing games, or at some point in the future that we probably won't witness, they don't exist anymore? Because on the one hand, I have the feeling that a game like Prim, I mean, I've watched many streamers and YouTubers play the game, and also the young ones. And when I say young, I mean 20 upwards. They enjoyed it. But in general terms, younger players, especially when they are at the age of my students, like 14, 16, 18, that's not the type of game that they like to play. When I ask them, some of them say story games, but when they say story games, they mean something different than I think of when I hear story games. So the question is, how can adventure games evolve in a way that will still make them attractive when the people driven by nostalgia are gone? And this is an interesting question. I mean, there are a couple of side-scrolling games that have elements of adventure games. I mean, what is an adventure game? If we have a point-and-click adventure game and think of LucasArts or Sierra, I mean, we're talking about two different types of games from these two companies alone. So I think adventure games have already gone through a necessary development, and what people like, at least people like me, try to do is somehow emulate this experience we had in the 90s, 2000s, and give them modern perks, modern elements that make them feel a little fresh.
Mechanics.
And what? Right. And what these kids that are kids nowadays might need is something different. So maybe some kind of evolvement that increases the pace or makes them steerable with a controller more easily. So I think the typical point and click adventure game won't live on forever, because it's mostly played because of nostalgic feelings. Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think about that?
My answer for that, I think I might say it was, since I'm coming from, I have a RPG background, I played adventure games, but not a lot. I fell in love with the Fallout, first two Fallouts, that kind of thing. So I thought to myself that if I want to refresh something, then I have to make a player more immersed in a story. Because I didn't know how to work with engine as well, how to make a game. So let's presume that I can do this and this and that, and what can I do with that? So yeah, it's basically my answer would be the immersion, because that's how we can tackle all that first-person shooter, for example, crowd.
Yeah, right.
They want to be immersed in something and forget their problems and no pocket money thing and la la la.
Yeah. Also, another thing that we might think of as designers is thinking how behavior of players has changed, especially players our age. I mean, when I find the time to actually play a game, I'm really happy when it's divided into shorter chapters, because when I find time for playing, it's half an hour or an hour, and then I might forget about the game for a week or two, and then I start playing again. So I really enjoyed The Unavowed by What Jedi Games, for example, because it had this chapter-like structure, and every time I went back to the game, it felt like a new tiny game. And I didn't have to think too much, okay, what happened? Okay, I could grasp the context. But I was really happy that it was cut into tiny bits.
That's an answer as well, yeah. We actually, we tackled this question on first episode of the first season. It was an interview with Livio from Gibbous, and
lovely guy.
Yeah. And we talked exactly about this problem, how to solve the issue that nowadays player can't possibly, maybe, probably sit there for 2 hours, for 6 hours, and then come back next day. That everybody has their own fast lives, and the person can come back to the game after 2 weeks and whoa, what happened? So we also, in that regard, we mentioned what Witcher 3 has, at least on, I know that Witcher 3 has, that when loading, you have that small story what happened. And I never saw that within an adventure game, probably, yet. But I haven't.
And it's a great idea to skip or to make loading times feel not unnecessary.
As well.
And not like a waste of time.
Yeah. What was I doing? Oh, that one. Oh, okay. It's like three, four sentences and you're set to go. And that's one of the
great idea.
Solutions. Or have a journal in-game. But that's,
And if you talk about immersion, that always supports immersion, I guess, when you have something that is part of the game world and not some loading bar slowly increasing.
Sure, yeah. I played with the idea to have within the pause menu, within the inventory or whatever you want to call it, a place where player can create his or her own input, like I just did this and that or la la la, but I kind of dropped it because I don't see it happening actually a lot that people will
But that's a very cool idea, because it really has a real world thing, like taking notes involved, and you can even do it in game. That's really cool, because I've been reading about detective games a bit lately, because I have a section in my game that plays like a detective game a bit, and the gist of it, of what I read, was basically that the more realistic the investigation feels, the better the immersion works, which means if you just click here and click there and then the character tells you the solution of the problem, then it doesn't feel like detective work. You really have to find a way to create an interface that lets the player draw his or her own conclusions. And this is quite a hard thing to do.
But
having like a text production software in your game and taking notes feels like that.
It is.
But how do you... Yeah.
How do what?
But the problem is, how is it just for the player, or does the game somehow react to this diary? It's pretty hard to code, probably, maybe impossible, if you don't want to make it feel like a text parser. So It's a cool idea, and it's a cool idea. Full stop. I'm done.
It's a cool idea, and it costs only 3 months of development, which are costing... Oh, let's not do that. Yeah. It's, everything in the end might... Again, to make a new awesome thing might... It usually is costly, and since adventure games usually do not have such a large amount of funding, we had to let those cool ideas go, because we just can't do them.
It's always about killing your darlings sometimes.
Yeah. Well, okay, where was I? So now you said that you have three jobs. First and foremost, your most favorite job is being a father, which is a really cheesy thing to say, but well, okay.
I hope you can forgive me.
No, I can't, but well, watch it. It's too late now.
Okay, never mind. I don't worry.
Also, it's a correct attitude. Do you ever play with the idea going full time with game dev?
Honestly, not really. I'm comfortable living the life I'm leading right now. Of course, it sounds like a dream. And I think some of the perks are obvious, like being self-employed, having really cool and creative jobs, at least at times. Sometimes I have the feeling my job as a game developer is just writing emails all day, because that's sometimes what I do all day for my game, writing emails. But on the downside, I think there is always some insecurity involved. I mean, you have to come up with fresh and most of all with ideas that in the end will pay the rent, because they sell. Yeah. And I think this puts a pressure on a creative mind and might even lead to a block that I don't want to have. And I'm really happy that I can. Of course, I do feel some of the pressure, and which is also a good thing. And also deadlines are a good thing. And without deadlines, I would never be finished, probably. But on the other hand, I'm really happy that I can rely on my regular wages.
Mm-hmm. I'm not asking about your salary, but how are the teachers paid in Germany, like overall?
I don't have the numbers, but in comparison to countries like the US, for example, pretty well. I think it's a decent pay that we get.
Because we here in the outskirts of Europe. It totally feels like they want to destroy the teacher's profession per se, because every country has a minimal income like every year, and teachers get only that a bit more, and that's
okay. That's a shame.
That's a shame. Anyway, that's a shame, and we have really good big. Angry neighbor, that's a even bigger shame, but well, we can't do anything about that. Talking about deadlines, how Prim is doing now? On schedule?
Depends. In some areas we are actually on schedule. I mean, what we started doing and what was one of our first priority as well, apart from making the game, was having all the Kickstarter rewards ready as soon as possible, mm-hmm. so that the backers also see, okay, we take their own needs seriously. And what we've been doing in recent weeks is we've been collecting all the things that the backers send us. I mean, you've done a Kickstarter campaign yourself. You know that it's important to really value the things that the backers send you. And in our case, they could send in texts for a book. They could send in pictures that were turned into playing cards. They could send in little drawings that ended up in the game as carvings in a tree. So we made sure that we had a look at all of these that we've sent every backer a confirmation. Okay, we can work with what you sent in, and we can implement it like this. And
that's some backers even a lot of work, a lot.
Yeah, right. It is. But it was so cool, actually. I don't know if you have some sort of a reward like this, but just seeing how creative these guys are and that they really take your game world so seriously. I mean, I loved some of the texts that they've sent in. They were asked to describe, to create a being, a creature that lives in the realm of the dead, and to write a short description so we can put it in some sort of biology book in the game. Oh. And they got so creative, it's amazing. And they created creatures that I would love to include in the game story because they're so cool. I don't know, did you include something similar in your campaign that the backers could get creative?
But yeah, we are creating a character and a quest line with one backer, which was before that, I thought that it will be like a work thing, that I will contact the person and there will be called an interesting money guy because, well, that year was like a lot of monies. But I'm happy to say that it turned out complete opposite, and the person is amazing, and we talk like for 4 or 5 hours. I called for a little small question that could wait for a week or two, and we just chatted away for 5 hours, which is amazing. My wife don't think it's amazing because, dude, you're home in the morning only. But what you gonna do? It's my job,
right? Yeah. Are you a full-time game developer, Olafs?
Now, yes.
That's cool. How does it feel?
Really scary. Yes, you're totally right. Because you don't have insurance, you don't have anything, and you have no idea where you will be after a year. But I came to this point thinking that I want to make this like a long last thing that I do. Because I was freelancer for years and I just got tired of it. So I want, well, it is freelancing, but I want something more. I don't know, for now, good. After a year, we'll see.
Yeah, I wish you all the best for that.
Oh, thank you. Well, that's it. We have, it's been almost an hour. Man.
That's right.
Ooh. So yeah,
it went by like nothing.
Yeah, it always does. It's good. Because, well, if a time flies, then you have a good time. So thank you, man. Thank you for your time and all the success to you and Prim and
same
all
to you.
The people involved.
Oh, I'd be happy to release a game that most people like. That's the first step.
Yes. Players.
All right,
are
Olaf, thank you so much. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, finally.
Bye, man.
Finally, Mikkel. Ciao. Well, here it is. Chat did go a bit back and forth, but. I'll get better and better and better. I hope you liked this episode, maybe even heard something new. You are very welcome to visit Grund.com for the links, check out other podcast episodes, maybe wishlist Grund on Steam, send me an email or whatever you fancy. Have a coffee, be safe, and Jesus bloody Christ, let's hope things get better in the world. We're all tired of being constantly reminded about how fucked up some specimens of human race are. Let's have a pause for 100 years or so, at least, and have a good lives from here into the future. Bye.